So imagine betting $1 million that the global wheat market is just going to completely collapse, like a totally catastrophic crash.
Right.
You take your position, and then the exact opposite happens. The market just proceeds to have its most explosive historic rally of the decade.
Oh man, worst nightmare.
Exactly. You are unequivocally 100% wrong about the direction of the overall market. It is not even close.
Yeah.
And yet, instead of, losing your shirt and going bankrupt, you just calmly close your position and you walk away with a massive targeted profit.
Which is wild to think about.
It really is. I mean, it sounds like some kind of illegal Wall Street magic, doesn't it? Or like a glitch in the trading matrix, but it's actually just the foundational mathematics of spread trading.
It is the exact reason professional traders rely on these structures every single day. And it's exactly what we are going to unpack today.
Yeah, but before we uncover how that wizardry actually works, just a really quick shout out to the folks who make this deep dive possible. This deep dive is brought to you by Cert Fuel. If you are gearing up for exam day, they've got a full Series 3 course with adaptive study quizzes, smart flashcards, and unlimited practice exams that are weighted just like the real thing.
Which is super helpful.
It is. So go check it out at CertFuel.com. Okay, let's just get right into it. Today, we are conquering an absolute behemoth on the Series 3 exam.
Behemoth is almost an understatement.
Yeah, we are talking about spread trading, specifically like order execution, market expectations, and the underlying mechanics of how these trades actually function in the real world.
Yeah, and if you look at the structure of the Series 3 exam, the material we're covering today is part of a massive block. I mean, it spans roughly 71% of your total test across those first seven chapters.
71%.
Yeah, you really cannot fake your way through this part. You can't just, memorize a couple of acronyms and hope for the best.
Right.
If you want to pass, you have to understand the structural logic of a spread on like a cellular level.
Exactly. And look, we know you. If you are listening to this right now, we know how you learn. Standard dry academic lectures, where some professor just drones on about basis risk and contango, well, that's going to lose you fast.
Oh, instantly.
Your eyes will glaze over and you'll retain absolutely nothing. So for this deep dive, we are throwing the traditional textbook completely out the window.
Good riddance.
Right. To make this stick like super glue for exam day, we are going to use weird, memorable analogies. We are going to introduce recurring characters so you can actually visualize the math playing out in a story.
Which is so much better for retention.
Totally. We'll use pattern interrupts, and we will hit you with pop quizzes where you have to think on your feet before we just hand you the answer.
And that is really the best way to tackle complex financial engineering. Because at its core, a spread trade is a
Yeah,
paradox.
like what I was talking about at the start.
Exactly. It's the paradox you introduced at the top of the show. Like, how can a trader make money when their macro prediction is entirely, completely wrong?
It breaks your brain a little bit.
It does. And to solve that paradox, we have to strip away a deeply ingrained illusion that we all have about trading.
You mean the whole buy low, sell high mentality?
Exactly that. From the time we're kids, we're basically conditioned to view investing as a directional bet on a single asset.
Right, like you buy a stock, you hope the line goes up.
Yeah. You short a stock, you hope the line goes down. But spread trading requires you to fundamentally rewire that whole perspective. We are not betting on the line anymore.
Okay, consider my brain ready to be rewired. Let's start with the absolute foundation here. What is the core identity of a spread in the futures market? Like, how are we defining this?
So simply put, a spread is the simultaneous holding of a long position in one futures contract and a short position in a related futures contract.
Okay, long one, short another.
Right. But the key word there is related. You aren't just buying one random thing and hoping it goes up.
Got it.
You're intentionally building a structure where you have opposing positions at the exact same time.
Wait, I'm getting tripped up here right out of the gate. If I buy a corn contract and then I simultaneously short a corn contract, didn't I just cancel my trade out? Like, isn't my net position essentially zero? Why would I pay exchange fees just to hold a net zero position?
That is the perfect question, and it's a super common early misconception. If you bought and sold the exact same contract,
Right.
say long December corn and short December corn, yeah, you would just be flat. Your positions would offset and close.
Okay.
But a spread involves related contracts, not identical ones.
Give me an example.
For instance, you might go long December corn, but short March corn.
Oh, okay. Different months.
Exactly. They're the same underlying commodity, but they have different delivery months. This is what the industry calls an intra-market spread or a calendar spread.
Right. Calendar makes sense because of the months.
Yeah. Or you might go long Chicago wheat and short Kansas City wheat. Same general agricultural sector, but totally distinct
So
commodities.
that would be intermarket.
You got it. Intermarket spread. The whole point is they are highly correlated, but they are not identical.
Okay, let's visualize this because, long one, short another, highly correlated, it can get really abstract very fast.
It definitely can.
So imagine you're out on the ocean and there are two small boats floating right next to each other.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
Suddenly the tide starts coming in, just a massive surge of water. The entire ocean level is rising rapidly. Now, does that overall macro tide matter to the relationship between those two boats?
Not at all.
Right, because the tide lifts both of them equally. The broad market moved the massive surge in the ocean. It just doesn't matter.
Exactly.
What you're actually betting on, what you really care about in spread trading, is the distance between those two boats. Does your boat rise slightly faster than the other one because it's lighter? Or, if the tide is rushing out and market is crashing, does your boat sink slightly slower?
That's right.
You are no longer trading the tide, you are trading the distance.
That is a phenomenal analogy. You're trading the distance, which in futures terminology is actually called the differential or the gap.
The gap, right?
And because you're trading the gap, the overall tide becomes totally irrelevant. If the whole market crashes, but the gap between your two contracts moves in the direction you predicted, you make a profit.
It's crazy.
It is. The massive, terrifying macro moves in the underlying asset largely just cancel each other out across the long and short legs of your spread.
So to really bring this to life for exam day, let me introduce you to our first recurring character of the day. Listeners, meet Cautious Chloe.
I like Cautious Chloe already.
Right. Now, Cautious Chloe is a brilliant futures trader, but she absolutely hates guessing if the whole global economy is going to expand or contract. The anxiety of trying to predict that macro tide keeps her up at night.
Understandably so.
Yeah, she doesn't want to bet on whether the ocean is rising or falling. She just wants to bet on the differential between two highly related things.
And by doing so, she's making a very specific mathematical trade-off.
Exactly. Because she is hedging her bets, going long on boat A and short on boat B. She is intentionally giving up the massive astronomical upside of a one-way directional bet. If the wheat market absolutely explodes overnight, the guy who just bought naked long wheat contracts is going to be buying a private jet. Cautious Chloe is not.
No, she's not.
Her short leg is going to bleed money while her long leg makes money, which dampens her overall return. Her profit potential is substantially lower.
But, and this is what the exam will definitely test you on, her risk is also substantially lower. Cautious Chloe trades that massive upside for a better night's sleep.
A very fair trade, honestly.
The offsetting legs dampen the volatility. Giving up the full upside of a directional bet is just the toll she pays to reduce her systemic risk.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. And I need to sound the alarm on a massive trap the exam will try to set for you.
Oh,
I
yes.
need you to put up a giant flashing neon sign in your brain right now. The vocabulary trap.
The infamous straddle trap. If we connect this to the broader picture of your exam prep, you're going to encounter the word straddle in two completely different contexts.
Right.
And the test writers know this causes confusion. In the futures market, a spread is very frequently referred to as a straddle.
But wait a minute. Didn't we learn about an options straddle in an entirely different chapter?
We absolutely did, and they are completely different financial animals.
How so?
Well, think back to your options chapter. An option straddle involves buying a call option and buying a put option on the exact same underlying asset.
Right, at the exact same strike price.
Exactly, and with the exact same expiration date. You are buying pure volatility there. You don't care which way the market breaks. You just need it to break really hard.
Okay, so that's the options world. What about the futures world?
A futures straddle is exactly what we're discussing today, going long one futures contract and short a related futures contract to trade the differential.
So no puts or calls.
No puts or calls involved at all. You aren't buying pure volatility. You are trading a specific price relationship.
Okay.
The exam will deliberately use the word straddle in a futures question to see if you instinctively apply the options logic.
So on exam day, when you sit down at the testing center and you see you are in the future section, say it with me. Straddle equals spread. Straddle equals spread.
Perfect.
Do not let them cross-contaminate your brain with the options definition. Okay, I'm going to pause right here and throw a direct question at you, the listener.
Let's see if they're following along.
Think about this scenario for a second. If our friend Cautious Chloe goes long on wheat in May and she simultaneously goes short on wheat in July, she's established her spread, and suddenly a devastating global event happens and the entire wheat market absolutely crashes. Just a total meltdown. Outright buyers who were long wheat are financially wiped out.
Total disaster.
Did Cautious Chloe automatically lose money?
Take a beat and think about the boats.
Got your answer.
The answer is no. She did not automatically lose money. Not necessarily.
This is the mind-bending part. How does she survive that?
Well, the tide went out drastically. But if the gap between May wheat and July wheat moved in her favor during that catastrophic crash.
Meaning
her long leg fell less than her short leg fell, she profits. She walks away in the green while the rest of the market is just burning down around her.
Okay, that makes the math work. And it's an incredible protective mechanism. But it brings up a huge logistical question.
What's that?
If Chloe is only trading the gap, this abstract distance between two prices, how does she actually execute that order in the real world?
Execution.
Yeah, because she can't just call her broker and say, hey, buy me a boat and sell me a boat and make sure the distance is good. How does the machinery of the exchange actually handle this?
It handles it by radically changing how the price is quoted. Because Cautious Chloe is tracking the distance, the spread is quoted to her purely as the price difference, the differential.
Not the full prices.
Right. It is not quoted as two separate outright prices. Let's break down the mechanics. Let's say the nearby futures contract is trading on the board at 420.
Okay.
And the deferred contract further out in time is trading at 445. The spread is not quoted to Chloe as 420 and 445. It's quoted as the gap. 25.
And let's clarify something critical here, because this trips people up when they're trying to calculate profit and loss on the exam.
Yeah.
When we say 420 and 445 and a gap of 25, we are talking about points.
Yeah,
it's not literal dollar amounts. It's a 25-point differential.
Precisely. These are futures price points. To turn that into dollars, you have to know the multiplier for the specific commodity, but for quoting the spread, it's just the points.
So she just watches that number 25.
Right. Chloe is obsessively watching how that 25-point gap fluctuates. Does it go to 26? Does it shrink to 24?
Yeah.
She doesn't care if the outright prices move to 620 and 645 because the gap is still 25. Her sole target is the differential.
And because her target is the differential, she uses a highly specific execution tool called a single spread order.
A single spread order, yes.
That sounds wonderfully clean and organized compared to managing, like, multiple tickets.
It is the beauty of exchange infrastructure. A single spread order tells the exchange's matching engine to execute both legs simultaneously, but only if it can achieve that exact target differential.
Okay, so you just say to the exchange, I want this 25-point gap.
Yep. The exchange algorithms go to work, and they fill both your long position and your short position at the exact same millisecond to lock in that gap.
Wow.
It completely eliminates what institutional traders call execution risk or legging risk.
Okay. To fully grasp why Chloe's single spread order is so brilliant and why execution risk is so terrifying, we need to meet our second recurring character. Enter Slippery Steve.
Uh-oh. I have a feeling Slippery Steve is about to make a very expensive mistake.
He absolutely is. Slippery Steve is an amateur trader who thinks he is smarter than the exchange. He thinks he can outmaneuver the high-frequency algorithms by what the industry calls legging in.
Classic Steve.
Right. He looks at the single spread order and thinks, why should I let the exchange bundle this? I'll just place two separate outright market orders myself and build the spread manually. Maybe I can squeeze an extra point out of the market.
It is a classic, deeply dangerous mistake. Let's walk through the mechanics of what actually happens to Steve on the trading floor.
Yeah, let's do it. Slippery Steve decides he wants that exact same spread as Chloe. He sees the nearby at 420 and the deferred at 445. He wants that 25-point gap.
Okay.
So he decides to buy the long leg first. He hits the button on a market order and fills his long leg at 420. He leans back, smiles, and thinks, great, I've got the first half.
He's feeling good.
Yeah, but then Steve gets slightly distracted. Maybe his dog barks. Maybe his phone buzzes with a text. He takes 30 seconds to type in his short order for the deferred contract.
30 seconds in a modern futures market is an eternity. I mean, it is a lifetime.
Exactly. The market is incredibly fast. Some economic news just dropped. By the time Steve refocuses and hits enter on his second order to short the deferred contract, it is no longer at 445.
Where is it?
It has plummeted down to 430.
Oh, man. And just like that, Steve's mathematical foundation completely collapses.
Let's look at the number.
Let's do it. He bought his long leg at 420. He just shorted the deferred leg at 430. What happened to his intended gap of 25 points?
It's totally destroyed. He locked in a gap of only 10 points.
Precisely. Because he exposed himself to the time delay between the two orders, he suffered massive slippage. He assumed the second price would just sit there waiting for him.
But markets are dynamic.
Exactly. By legging in, he took on an unquantifiable amount of execution risk.
Let's do a rigorous side-by-side comparison of these two approaches because it's highly testable material. Let's look at Slippery Steve versus Cautious Chloe.
Good idea.
Slippery Steve, the guy who loves legging in, specifies two independent prices. His orders fill separately at different times. He carries massive execution risk because the market can and will move while he is distracted.
And as we're going to explore in a moment, he gets absolutely punished on the capital requirements too.
Right. Now contrast that chaotic approach with Cautious Chloe. She uses a proper single spread order.
Yeah.
She doesn't specify the individual prices. She only specifies the 25-point differential.
Yeah.
Her order fills simultaneously. The exchange guarantees the gap. She carries absolutely zero execution risk regarding the differential. And she is rewarded by the exchange for structural discipline.
That's the way to do it.
But hold on, let me push back here for a second. Sometimes you read forums where you talk to old school traders and they talk about legging in as if it's a pro move.
Oh, I know.
Like it's a clever shortcut to get a better average price. The exam might try to frame it that way, right?
It absolutely will. The exam will try to lure you into thinking that legging in is an advanced preferred strategy for sophisticated traders who are looking to optimize their entry. Do not fall for it.
The trap.
A huge one. Legging in is a significantly higher risk, structurally flawed way to build a spread.
Why is it structurally flawed beyond just, you know, missing the price?
Well, think about what Steve's portfolio looked like during those 30 seconds he was distracted.
Okay.
For 30 seconds, Steve was holding a naked, unhedged, outright long position. He had bought the 420 contract, but hadn't sold the other one yet.
Oh, right.
If a black swan event happened in those 30 seconds, if a major geopolitical conflict broke out, the market could a limit down crashed. He would have taken the full, devastating directional loss of an outright position.
Wow.
He accidentally took on the exact catastrophic exposure that a spread is specifically designed to avoid.
So Steve is essentially out there walking a tightrope without a net just to save a microsecond or prove he's smarter than the system.
Pretty much.
And he ends up ruining his position and exposing himself to ruin. The takeaway here is really simple. Don't be like Slippery Steve. Use a simultaneous spread order, period.
Here, here.
Now, speaking of risk and capital, we briefly mentioned that Steve gets punished financially for doing this manually, while Chloe gets rewarded. Let's talk about the VIP financial pass you get when you trade a proper spread. Let's dive into margin.
Margin calculation is one of the most critical mechanical aspects of the Series 3.
Definitely.
In the futures world, margin is not a down payment on an asset like it is in equities. It is a performance bond.
A performance bond, okay.
It is a good faith deposit you leave with the exchange's clearinghouse to prove you can cover your potential daily losses. The overarching rule you need to internalize right now is lower risk equals lower margin.
Wait, I need to challenge this. The clearinghouse is a massive financial institution. They aren't really known for their charity or their kindness.
Fair point.
Why would they voluntarily give Cautious Chloe a massive discount on her required capital? Why not just charge her full price and hold more of her money to be safe?
Because the clearinghouse uses highly sophisticated risk models, specifically a system called span margin, which stands for Standard Portfolio Analysis of Risk.
Span margin, right.
The clearinghouse simulates how a portfolio will perform under dozens of extreme market scenarios. When they look at two naked outright positions, they see maximum directional risk.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They have to demand a massive bond to protect themselves from a default.
Right, because if Steve is just long corn and corn drops 50 cents, Steve's bleeding cash, and he might actually default on his obligation to the clearinghouse.
Exactly. But when the clearinghouse looks at Cautious Chloe's portfolio, they see a long position and a short position in highly correlated contracts.
Right, the boats on the tide.
Yes. Their algorithms recognize that a broad market crash will hit both legs similarly. The long leg will lose money, but the short leg will make money offsetting the damage.
So the risk is just lower.
The net risk of Chloe defaulting is exponentially reduced. The clearinghouse isn't taking a bond against the full directional price swing of the commodity anymore. They are only requiring a bond large enough to cover the expected volatility of the gap itself.
And because the gap moves much slower and in a much tighter range than the outright commodity, the required bond is tiny by comparison. We aren't talking about a 10% discount here. The margin relief is massive. A spread's margin can often be a small fraction of what you'd pay to hold those two outright positions separately.
Which brings us directly to a classic, highly testable math trap on the exam.
Let's set it up for them. Let's say an exam question gives you the following data. The initial margin requirement to hold an outright long position in leg A is $2,000.
Okay.
The initial margin requirement to hold an outright short position in leg B is also $2,000. The question then asks, what is the required margin to hold a spread containing both leg A and leg B?
And let me guess the options.
The multiple choice options are A, $4,000, B, $2,000, C, $500.
If you are moving too fast, your brain just does the simple arithmetic. Leg A is 2,000, leg B is 2,000, therefore the total is 4,000.
Seems logical.
If you select $4,000, you have fallen headfirst into the trap.
You cannot just add the outrights together.
Never. The margin on a spread is fundamentally lower than the sum of the two outright positions because of those S-band risk offsets we just discussed.
So what's the right answer?
In that multiple choice scenario, you must look for the reduced spread margin option, which would be the $500. Lower risk equals lower margin.
Okay, stop what you are doing. Seriously, pattern interrupt time.
Pay attention to this part.
If you are walking the dog, stop walking. If you are at the gym, put the weights down. If you are washing the dishes, turn the water off. Shake it out. Take a deep breath.
We are not exaggerating. Focus up.
We are about to cover the single most important conceptual rule in this entire deep dive. If you completely zone out for the rest of this discussion, if you remember only one single sentence when you sit down for your exam, it absolutely must be this next sentence.
The stakes are incredibly high for this concept. We refer to this internally as the invariant of spread trading.
The invariant, okay.
An invariant is an absolute, unmoving mathematical anchor. It does not care about market conditions. It does not care about what commodity you are trading.
Weigh it on them. What is the golden rule?
Spread profits when the long leg outperforms the short leg. Period.
Say it one more time, slower.
A spread profits when the long leg outperforms the short leg. It never, ever changes.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you are playing a widening gap, a narrowing gap, a normal market, an inverted market, an intra-market spread, or an intermarket spread. The long leg must beat the short leg for the trader to make money.
Okay, we need to rigorously unpack the word outperforms. Because in everyday colloquial language, if I tell you that my tech stock outperformed your utility stock, it almost universally implies that my stock went up more than yours.
Right. It implies a rising market.
Yeah. But in spread trading, outperform is a much more nuanced, multidirectional concept. It doesn't just mean the long leg goes up.
Far from it. Outperforming simply means the relative mathematical relationship moved in favor of the long position. Yes, it can mean the long leg rises more points than the short leg in a bull market. But, and this is the absolute kicker that confuses candidates, it also means the long leg can fall less than the short leg in a bear market.
Let's create a vivid, totally absurd scenario to prove this point so it sticks in your memory. Let's return to cautious Chloe.
Our favorite trader.
She is long leg A and she is short leg B. They are related agricultural contracts. Mm-hmm. Now let's say a literal meteor falls from the sky and detonates over the largest farming region in the world.
Oh my goodness.
The ecosystem is destroyed, the supply chain panics, the entire global market goes into a free fall limit down crash.
Complete devastation. So both leg A and leg B are crashing simultaneously. They're basically falling off a cliff.
Yes. Both contracts are losing value by the second. But because of specific delivery month dynamics, leg B is plummeting faster and deeper than leg A.
Okay, I see where this is going.
Let's put numbers to it. In the panic, leg A falls by 50 points. Leg B falls by 100 points. The question is, does cautious Chloe make a profit on her spread?
The answer is yes.
Why? Walk us through the exact math of the invariant.
The golden rule states she profits if the long leg outperforms. Let's look at the legs. She is long leg A. It fell 50 points. That's a loss of 50 points on that side of the ledger.
Right. Minus 50.
She is short leg B. Leg B fell 100 points. When you are short something and it falls, you make money.
Oh.
So she made 100 points on the short side. A 1-in-1 gain minus a 50-point loss leaves her with a net profit of 50 points.
That is incredible.
Even though both legs crashed, her long leg fell less. It was stronger in the downturn. Therefore, the long leg outperformed the short leg.
It's exactly like that old joke about two hikers who encounter an angry grizzly bear in the woods. One hiker starts tying his running shoes. The other says, "Are you crazy? You can't outrun a bear." The first hiker says, "I don't have to outrun the bear. I just have to outrun you."
That is spread trading in a nutshell.
Right. Leg A didn't outrun the bear being the market crash. Leg A still fell. But leg A outran leg B on the way down. Therefore, the long leg outperformed.
And that brings us directly to a vicious exam trap regarding market direction versus the gap. The exam writers love to set up a scenario where the overall macro market rallied massively.
A massive bull run.
And the question will ask you if a specific spread position was profitable during that rally.
A candidate who doesn't understand the invariant will reason, well, the whole market went up. It was a massive bull run. So obviously the spread must have made money.
And they will fail that question immediately.
Because they are looking at the tide, not the boats. They're distracted by the macro noise.
Precisely. You must always relentlessly ask yourself one specific question. Did the gap between the two legs move the trader's way?
Meaning, mathematically, did the long leg outperform the short leg?
Exactly. The outright macro direction can go completely 100% against the trader's personal intuition, just like the meteor strike, while the underlying spread structure still prints money.
Okay, so if the golden rule never changes, if the unyielding law of physics here is always the long leg must outperform, it begs a massive practical question.
What's that?
When I open my trading software to place a spread order, I have two distinct contracts in front of me. How do I actually decide which one to assign as my long leg and which one to assign as my short leg?
Ah, that assignment entirely depends on your expectation of how the gap is going to behave in the future. Specifically, you have to decide whether you think the distance between the two prices will get wider over time or narrower over time.
Ah, widening versus narrowing gaps. This is where the strategy actually gets deployed. Okay, let's break this down into really simple, actionable rules for exam day.
The very first thing to remember is that having a view on whether the gap will widen or narrow never, ever changes the golden rule.
You still need the long leg to outperform.
Always. The widen versus narrow view simply dictates which specific contract gets assigned as your long leg. The entire game of spread construction can be summarized in six words. Long the winner, short the loser.
Long the winner, short the loser.
You just have to use your analysis to figure out which one is going to be the winner.
Let's play out a widening gap scenario first. Imagine you're staring at your screens analyzing two contracts. You run your models, and you believe the distance between them is going to increase. They're going to pull away from each other. How do you construct that trade?
To profit from a widening gap, you go long. The leg that you expect will gain ground relative to the other.
Okay.
You make that your long leg because your analysis says it will be the winner. Consequently, you go short the other leg.
Makes sense.
As they pull further apart, your chosen long leg is outperforming and the invariant holds true. You profit.
Okay, but let me introduce some friction here. I'm getting a little tripped up.
Lay it on me.
If I expect the gap to widen specifically because I think leg B is going to absolutely tank, why wouldn't I just take a naked short position on leg B and leave it at that? Why do I have to buy leg A to make it a spread? Isn't buying a loser contract just dead weight that eats into my profits?
That is the eternal debate between speculators and spreaders. Yes, if you are absolutely certain that leg B is going to tank, a naked short will make you more money. But remember the paradox from the beginning of the show. What if you were wrong about the macro direction? What if you short leg B and suddenly the entire sector rallies on unexpected news?
Oh, your naked short gets obliterated.
Totally obliterated. By going long leg A simultaneously, you are buying a hedge. If the whole market rallies unexpectedly, your short leg B loses money, but your long leg A gains money, offsetting the disaster.
Oh, okay.
You buy the dead weight to ensure you survive to trade another day.
That makes perfect sense. It's an insurance policy against your own macro ignorance. Okay, now let me throw a direct question to you, the listener. Get ready to use the logic we just built.
Here we go.
Let's say you're looking at the board and you expect a narrowing gap, meaning you look at the two prices and you believe they're going to converge.
Right. The distance between them is going to shrink.
Yeah, they're going to get closer together. To profit from this convergence, which one do you make your long leg? Do you go long the higher priced contract or do you go long the lower priced contract?
Take a second. Visualize the two prices physically moving closer together.
Got your answer locked in.
If you expect a narrowing gap, you must go long the lower priced leg.
Why? Walk us through the physical mechanics of that convergence.
Think about what mathematically has to happen when two different prices converge. The lower priced asset has to rise up to meet the higher one, or the higher priced asset has to fall down to meet the lower one.
Okay, yeah.
In both of those scenarios, the lower priced leg is the one gaining relative ground. It is acting as the mathematical winner.
Interesting.
So following our rule of long the winner, short the loser, you assign the lower priced leg as your long position and you short the higher priced leg. As they compress and get closer together, your lower priced long leg is fundamentally outperforming the short leg.
Long the winner, short the loser. It works flawlessly every single time. But there is a massive conceptual trap right here that catches a shocking number of candidates off guard. It's a linguistic trap.
Oh yeah, words matter.
Often when people hear the phrase narrowing gap, they subconsciously associate the word narrowing with shrinking or going down. So they look at a question about a narrowing gap and think, oh, if it's going down, I should just sell the whole spread and hope for the best.
That is a terrible, unstructured strategy that demonstrates a complete misunderstanding of the mechanics.
Yikes.
A narrowing gap does not mean sell the spread and hope. It is a precise, calculated, structural move to deliberately go long the lower-priced nearby contract and short the higher-priced deferred contract.
It's very specific.
Extremely specific play, which we're going to define concretely with industry terminology in just a moment.
Okay, so we've spent a lot of time talking about how to play the gap, widening, narrowing, outperforming. But we haven't answered the most fundamental economic question of all. What actually causes these prices to be different in the first place?
Good point.
Why is a December corn contract priced at 420 and a March corn contract priced at 445? They're both corn, right? It's the exact same yellow vegetable. Why the price difference?
It's a great question.
To understand that, we have to look at what I like to call the terrain of the market, the underlying economic structure.
The terrain is everything. The spread is just the mechanical vehicle you use to navigate that terrain.
Right.
You can be the best driver in the world, but if you don't know if you're driving on a freshly paved, predictable highway, or if you're off-roading through a muddy, chaotic ditch, you are gonna crash.
That's a great way to put it.
In futures markets, that terrain is defined by the price relationship between nearby delivery months and deferred delivery months.
Let's bring in our final recurring character for the day to explain this terrain. Meet Farmer Fred.
Hey, Farmer Fred.
Farmer Fred is a good, honest, hardworking guy who grows millions of bushels of corn in Iowa. Now, imagine you walk up to Farmer Fred today, right after the harvest, and you say, Fred, I want to buy your corn right now for cash in the nearby month.
Okay.
He looks at the market and gives you a fair price, say $400. But then you change your mind. You say, actually, Fred, I don't want it now. I don't have anywhere to put it. I want you to hold on to it for me, and I'll take delivery in 6 months, in the deferred month.
Now, put yourself in Fred's shoes. He isn't going to just hold that massive pile of corn for free as a favor to you.
Right.
For those 6 months, he has to rent a physical steel silo to store it. He has to pay hefty insurance premiums on it in case it catches fire, gets ruined by moisture, or gets eaten by pests.
Those are rats, man.
Yeah, exactly. And most importantly, he has his own capital tied up in that corn capital that could be sitting in a bank earning a yield. These real, tangible costs, storage, insurance, and interest are what the financial industry calls carrying charges.
So logically, mathematically, if you demand that corn in 6 months, Fred has to pass those costs on to you. He has to charge you the base price plus the carrying charges.
Exactly. Therefore, the deferred price in the future is fundamentally higher than the nearby price today.
Got it.
And this economic reality brings us to the formal definition of a normal market. The Series 3 might also refer to this terrain using the industry term contango.
Normal market equals contango.
Yes. In a normal market, or contango, deferred delivery months are priced above nearby delivery months. Deferred is greater than nearby.
Okay.
This structure perfectly reflects the reality of Farmer Fred's carrying charges. It is the natural, expected, peaceful state of affairs when supply is adequate and the market is functioning smoothly.
Normal market equals contango equals deferred over nearby.
Got it. But what about the flip side? What happens when the peaceful terrain completely flips upside down? When we leave the paved highway and go into the muddy ditch?
That structural flip happens when there is a sudden severe disruption in the present moment. Imagine there is a massive, unexpected drought across the entire Midwest. The current corn crop is completely decimated.
Oh boy.
But our old friend Slippery Steve over there runs a massive industrial poultry farm with 2 million chickens. He needs corn right now to feed his flock, or they are all going to starve by next Tuesday.
There's almost no corn available in the physical cash market, though.
Exactly. What is Slippery Steve willing to pay for whatever nearby corn is left? He will pay absolutely anything. He will pay a massive, exorbitant, irrational premium to get his hands on nearby corn just to keep his business alive. He doesn't care what corn will cost 6 months from now when the next harvest comes in. If he doesn't get corn today, he's bankrupt.
This panic, this immediate demand, creates what we call an inverted market.
An inverted market.
The Series 3 might use the more technical term, backwardation. Driven by a severe supply shortage in the near term, the nearby contract becomes wildly expensive, blowing past the deferred months.
Wow, okay.
So in an inverted market or backwardation, the nearby is priced above the deferred months. Nearby is greater than deferred.
This is a critical structural distinction, and it leads straight into another classic exam trap.
They love to test this.
The exam will describe a scenario to you where the nearby price is trading 20 cents higher than the deferred price. It will then give you multiple choice options explaining why this is happening.
Let me guess.
One of those options will almost certainly say something like, this indicates a glitch in the exchange's pricing algorithm, or this market structure is broken and needs regulatory intervention.
Do not click that option. Do not assume the market is broken.
Right.
An inverted market is not an error. It is not a glitch in the matching engine. It is a perfectly natural, ruthlessly efficient economic response to a severe supply shortage. It is the expected result of tight nearby supply.
Makes sense.
If you think of an inversion as a mistake, you're going to subconsciously try to fix it in your head. You will flip the structure backward. You will misread which leg is the higher priced one, and you will set up your entire long and short spread structure completely backward.
Okay, let's pull all of these complex threads together into a single cohesive tapestry here. We've got the golden rule of the long leg outperforming. Hmm. We've got the mechanics of narrowing gaps and converging prices. And we've got the structural terrain of normal markets versus inverted markets.
It's a lot, but it all connects.
Let's synthesize all of this into the classic textbook example of a spread trade that you will absolutely see on the exam. Let's build the bull spread.
A bull spread is the perfect capstone because it requires you to see all these moving parts working in perfect harmony. Let's set the stage carefully. First, define the terrain. We are in a normal market.
Okay, normal market. Contango. I'm picturing Farmer Fred and his silos. That means the deferred contract is priced higher than the nearby contract because of those carrying charges. Storage, insurance, interest. Deferred is over nearby.
Correct. The structure is set. Now, you act as the analyst, you study the supply and demand data, and you decide that the gap between these two prices is going to narrow.
Okay, my view is a narrowing gap.
Mm.
We established earlier that for a narrowing gap where prices are converging together, the golden rule dictates that I must go long the winner.
Yep.
And when prices are compressing toward each other, the lower price leg is the one that acts as the relative winner.
So combining the terrain in your view, which leg is the lower price leg in our normal market?
The nearby.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have the carrying charges attached to it yet.
Exactly. So to fundamentally execute a play on a narrowing gap in a normal market, you must go long the lower price nearby contract, and you must short the higher price deferred contract.
Wow, look at that.
That highly specific, structurally sound setup, long nearby, short deferred, executed in a normal market, is the exact definition of a bull spread.
It is incredibly satisfying when the underlying logic just clicks together like that. It proves that you don't have to rote memorize 100 different disconnected scenarios for this exam if you just take the time to understand the core anchors.
Exactly right.
Long the winner, short the loser. Normal means deferred over nearby because of carry. Everything else logically flows downstream from those physical realities.
It really does. When you understand the deep economic mechanics and the structural terrain, the seemingly impossible questions on the exam stop being facts you have to regurgitate, and they become logical puzzles that you actually know how to solve.
Speaking of solving puzzles, we have covered an immense amount of technical ground today. We've gone from the conceptual two boats analogy all the way down to the clearinghouse margin calculations and contango backwardation dynamic.
It's been a journey.
It's time to lock this in. It is time for the rapid fire recap. Let's hammer home the five most highly testable takeaways from this deep dive. I'll take the odds, you take the evens. Ready?
Let's do it.
Number one, the core identity. A spread profits from a relative change in the differential, the gap between the two prices. It does not profit from being right about the overarching macro market direction. Remember the boats riding on the massive tide. You are trading the distance between the boats, not the depth of the ocean.
Number two, the margin VIP pass. Lower risk mathematically equals lower margin requirements and, correspondingly, lower profit potential. The offsetting long and short legs dampen your systemic exposure, so the clearinghouse's span algorithms cut you a massive break on the required performance bond. Crucially, do not just blindly add the outright margins together on the exam.
Number three, execution mechanics. Legging in, like our friend Slippery Steve, is a dangerous amateur game of unquantifiable execution risk that briefly leaves you holding a naked, unhedged outright position while you type your second order. Do not do it. Single spread orders are the safe, simultaneous execution method that guarantees you lock in your targeted differential without slippage.
Number four, the invariant. The golden, unbreakable rule of spread trading that never changes under any circumstances. A spread always profits when the long leg outperforms the short leg. That means the long leg either rises more in a bull rally or it falls less in a limit down crash. Remember the meteor in the cornfield. Long the winner, short the loser.
And finally, number five, reading the terrain. A normal market, or contango, means the deferred contract is priced over the nearby contract, driven entirely by Farmer Fred's carrying charges of storage, insurance, and interest. An inverted market, or backwardation, means the nearby contract is priced over the deferred contract, driven by Slippery Steve's desperate immediate supply shortage. It is not a glitch, it is just a tight panicking market.
That is a rock-solid, comprehensive recap right there. If you have internalized those five mechanical principles, you're going to be in excellent shape when you face the execution and expectation blocks on the Series 3.
This discussion has been incredibly clarifying. We took a topic that usually puts people to sleep and exposed the beautiful, ruthless mathematics underneath it. I feel like I actually understand why the market moves the way it does now.
Well, before you get too comfortable, I want to leave you, the listener, with a final, slightly provocative thought to mull over. Something to act as a conceptual stress test for your understanding of everything we've discussed today.
Ooh, a stress test. Let's hear it.
We've spent this entire hour talking about building spreads using related contracts like May wheat and July wheat or Chicago wheat and Kansas City wheat.
Right.
We do that because we know that broad macro market moves hit them both somewhat similarly, causing those massive directional swings to cancel out and protect us.
Right. The two boats are floating on the exact same body of water, rising on the same tide.
Precisely. But ask yourself this. What happens to this beautiful, protected, lower risk profile if a rogue trader tries to build a spread using two entirely unrelated commodities?
Like what?
What if someone decides to go long on agricultural soybeans and simultaneously short on a precious metal like gold?
Oh, wow.
Those underlying markets are fundamentally disconnected. Their price movements don't correlate at all. There is no shared tide.
That sounds dangerous.
In that scenario, does the math of a spread still protect you? Will the clearinghouse still grant you lower margin? Or, by severing the correlation, have you just accidentally created a wildly unpredictable monster comprised of two naked, unhedged directional bets that could both blow up in your face simultaneously?
Ooh, I love that. Think deeply about that one. Does the structural protection of the spread vanish the moment the economic correlation dies? That is a fantastic puzzle to chew on. Well, that is all the time we have for today's deep dive. Thank you so much for joining us, for pushing through the complex mechanics, and for putting in the hard work. Remember to review your cert fuel materials, run through those adaptive quizzes to see exactly where your weak spots are, and keep your head in the game. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.